welcome to Stranger Stopping Strangers, podcast number 50. Big welcome back to anyone who's returning, and thanks for stopping in to anybody who's new this week. On May 26, 2016, I launched my first podcast ever. And it's a welcome and intro with, you know, what I was hoping to do with the concept of Stranger Stopping Strangers, a podcast from a deadhead, with deadheads, for deadheads, and all of the amazing music that's inspired us along the way. This intro is still up as the very first entry on my website. Well, 16 months, 48 incredible guests with amazing stories and music later, the idea was planted, what about me? You know, my journey and stories and the origins of the podcast. I asked my friend Michael Sheridan, who was podcast number 12 and the first repeat guest, if he would do the honors and have the conversation, which admittedly is less of a conversation and about 85% of me talking. I can't express enough gratitude for everybody who's been involved in every way, shape, or form. The strangers who I've met, who have now become friends, to my friends and family, especially the family that I live with, my husband and my kids, who've supported me on this crazy adventure and borderline obsession and everything that's gone with it. I will say this is going to be one of the briefest intros to date because, you know, really all of the information and more is in the podcast. So I hope everybody enjoys, and thank you so much for tuning in today, in the past, and in the future. And much love to all, and I'll catch you soon.
Stace Smith, welcome to Stranger Stopping Stranger.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael Sheridan. It is a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure for me to be here for this extremely important podcast of yours. What's going on here?
So this is the 50th podcast, And for those who remember you, Michael Sheridan was one of my heavily downloaded and enjoyed podcasts, podcast number 12. And it's kind of been in the ether for a while where people have said, hey, what about somebody interviewing you? And so this is it. This is number 50. We're going to turn the tables and hear a little bit about my journey and everything that led me up to this day.
This is great because I've been intrigued and I haven't asked, for some reason, some of the questions I know you're going to answer, I never asked you before. And then when you told me about this, I'm like, cool, I'll finally get to these answers of Stacey about how this journey started with her and her podcast and her story about the Grateful Dead. It's got to be just as interesting as any of ours, and I'm just excited.
Well, I'm excited to share it, and you know, I think all of our stories are special. That's what's special about the community and the podcast is everybody, you know, it's always coming from the heart. Everybody's got their reasons for their feelings and their things in the beginning of their journey, and whether it's listening to music or going to music or seeing the Grateful Dead or seeing different, you know, incarnations of the band, everyone is so passionate that I've spoken to, and you know, obviously I'm passionate because here I am with this podcast. So I'm super excited to be able to share, you know, kind of what got me on the bus and where we are. So thank you.
Yeah, what you got going on, I would say that you're passionate.
Dead to the core. That's what I like to say. Dead to the core.
There you go.
I guess we'll start at the beginning like we usually do, you know, a little bit about
Stacey, tell me how this started. And let me warn the some of your listeners out there. We talk on the phone all the time. We're pretty good friends now. I saw you in SPAC each time we met in SPAC, and then I met you in person the next year in SPAC. And I'll try to do my best. We tend to talk over each other. So, Stacey, please, tell us your story.
Thank you. And if we talk over each other, then it just means we're having that much more fun. So, okay. Well, my story started, I'm a Bay Area girl. I'm a Peninsula girl, Bay Area girl, San Francisco girl. And honestly, my journey started before I even knew it. When I was 4 years old in 1977, my family moved to Atherton, California. Somewhere when I was about maybe 7 or 8 or 9, I remember the neighbors talking about how Bob Weir had lived at the house and that they used to have these really cool, or he had at least one really cool band playing out in the yard. There was a big yard surrounded by, you know, the neighbors.
You lived in Bob Weir's house?
I grew up in the same house that Bob Weir grew up in.
Why is it taking so long to find out? That's amazing.
So, yeah. No, I can't believe I haven't told you this before. All right. So, Michael and listeners, yeah, Bob Weir and I grew up at the same home, 89 Tuscaloosa, Atherton, California. So we perhaps grew up looking out the same window, or he grew up looking out the same window as my sisters.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know which window it was. But it was the same address. It was the same home. And really, the home was pretty much the same because, you know, his family sold it. There was one owner in between. And, you know, it was like a total funky 70s ranch. Like, we really didn't do much to it. So when I look at the pictures when I was a kid and the pictures from documentary when he goes home, it's the same spot. It's the same background. It's the same diving board, pool. So, yeah, it started, you know, way back, early days.
His energy got to you, man. Furniture holds stuff. That's really heavy, man.
Well, and my sister too, right? I mean, because she's a big deadhead as well.
No coincidence there. That's when the seed was planted.
Absolutely. So it starts there. Yeah. But, you know, I'm a kid, and I'm not really don't have much of a wherewithal. So we'll go up to 1987, and that was when my parents were splitting up. And, you know, as anyone whose parents have split up, you know, you get through it, but you need a little spiritual grounding. And that's where my Auntie Annie jumps in. And my Auntie Annie, of course, she was big part of the scene. I talk about her in my original intro. Graduated from high school in San Francisco, 1969. I mean, she was at all the shows at the park. And, I mean, she was a really vibrant part of the community. So, you know, whereas living in Bob Weir's house was lost on me as a child, of course, it was never lost on her. And she would, you know, play the music. And my original memory from the dead was Auntie Annie always saying, "When I die, I want you to play Ripple at my funeral." And that's my first memory, right, is my crazy Auntie Annie, my spiritual mother of sorts, saying, "When I die, you'll be in charge of the music, and I want Ripple played." So that's kind of when kind of it comes into focus a little bit. You know, now I've kind of honed in on the music, but still, I don't know, you know, still just kind of learning. So my sister starts going to shows. This is 1987, and we're in the Bay Area, and podcast, she talks a little bit about those experiences. You know, I'm in eighth grade, and I want to go to the shows, but I'm 13 years old and not quite there yet. So that's really where, you know, the Grateful Dead enters our life is, you know, my Auntie Annie playing the music and Michelle starting to go to the shows and me being a little sister who looked up to my big sister was like, wow, this is something I want to do. Parents splitting up and the music was there for me.
All signs point to yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and again, I think that part of the story is very much the same for all of us. Like, you know, you're in a transitional time of your life and you have this music and all of a sudden, It's this raft out there that you can hold on to. It's something. It's a family you can join. It's an identity that you can carry. And I think that was really the beginning of becoming a deadhead. When I was, you know, maybe a freshman in high school, new school. Wow, this is gonna get me through. This is gonna be my thing.
You know, you mentioned the fact of when you became a deadhead. And I give this probably way too much thought, but I've come to the conclusion, I think I might have said this to you before, that even though you had the story about the ether and Bob's house, I think for the most of us, we've had the spirit of a deadhead before we ever heard a song. Like, we were always this type of person, this adventurous, adventure-seeking, music-loving family of I want to take care of people and be nice to people. And I think that the Grateful Dead just fit our own narrative.
I completely agree. I mean, I think it lives within you, and then you have that moment where it takes flight.
There
you know?
It comes.
No, I completely agree with you. And I would say freshman year, you know, like that's kind of when it really began. And Michelle's in college, and I'm in a new school, and, you know, that's my thing. That's what I love. You know, and then like everyone, you know, you kind of have your first experience. So, you know, on this podcast, I got to pick my own songs, which I will say was so hard. It's funny. I always hear people saying, "Oh God, how do you just narrow it down?" And I absolutely went through the same process trying to narrow it down. But I'm going to start at the beginning. And my first show was April 30th, 1988. And it was at Frost Amphitheater. I mean, to those of you who have been to the Bay Area back in the 80s. In fact, the previous podcast, Rob Levitsky and I talk about Frost. I mean, it was just the most idyllic
beautiful venue that you could ever go to. It was on, it's on Stanford's campus. It was Stanford's amphitheater. So very small, open, you know, spring shows, eucalyptus trees. I mean, just a really magical place. So my first show was with Auntie Annie and my sister. And yeah, we went to Frost. And the song that I picked out to play for everyone is Shakedown Street. And to be honest, I don't even really remember. I feel like I've really come to be in touch with myself and how I resonate the memories. And I don't really have specific songs for specific shows. I mean, I have just an overall feeling of that time. And so when I looked back at the show, I simply selected Shakedown because it's just one of my favorite songs. I just fucking love that song. So it seemed like the right way to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear it. Let's do it. Let's go Shakedown, Shakedown Street.
Got to poke around. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, we're going to shake it back to Shakedown Street in Frost, April 30th, 1988. And then we'll come back and go on to the next step. Thank you.
We are back. That was awesome. Love you some Shakedown Street. So there it was. You started your journey, 1988. Frost, what happens next?
Well, so after, you know, the first show, I'm like locked and loaded. I'm in. Like I've met my people. This is where I belong, and this is who I am. So I think it was I think going to the first show was a defining moment of, you know, it's something I've always loved, but now I feel like I'm part of it. Now, like, this is it. This is for me. And this is who I am. So this is going into sophomore year in high school. So teenage years, moving along. I think probably the next kind of significant thing would be to say the summer between 1989 and 1990, I went on a trip to Israel. And I went to this trip to Israel with 60 other 16-year-old Jewish kids from the Bay Area. And instead of going with my group, I elected to go with the people from San Francisco and Marin County, which, again, it's a little bit adventurous, always wanting to branch out and, you know, try new things and new people. And
let me ask you.
Yeah.
We went from 88. Now we're going to Israel in 89. Between the time you started and the time on this great trip that I can't wait to hear about, by how many shows do you think you saw? How much of the culture have you started to actually absorb between that time?
I would say about 5 or 6 shows. I remember going... Yeah, like it's something at Shoreline. I remember going to the Oakland Coliseum. I remember meeting my sister and her friends from Davis, where she was going, and meeting them in Oakland. Yeah, I would say I did another set of Frost because they played the next year. And I remember the Oakland Coliseum outdoor shows. And, you know, had dipped my toe in the water enough for a 15, 16-year-old where I felt like, yeah, I go to dead shows. I'm cool.
All right. Sorry to cut you off there. Continue.
No, again, not much for, you know, again, I'm dealing, you're 15, you're 16 years old, you don't have a lot of money, you don't drive, you know, so I was definitely at the fate of finances, rides, logistics, things of that nature, but I definitely pursued it. So then I go to Israel, and I still remember the flight out and wearing the little shirt that had the dancing bears on it that said, "Nothing left to do but smile, smile, smile." And, you know, bringing all my gear. I have the tie-dye shirt that has the big happy face on it, which my kids now call the emoji shirt, which is so funny because, you know, in 1899, it was just a happy face. And, you know, I go on this trip, and I am the deadhead hippie girl. And this is significant because I meet my friend Wendy. And Wendy is still, to this day, one of my absolute best friends. And she'll kind of be floating through this whole podcast as just a real anchor to my experiences. But meeting Wendy on the Israel trip was absolutely a game changer in terms of, you know, what was in store. Because when we got back, you know, we were friends in Israel, but when we got back, it was like, okay, I've met other people that, you know, that I want to experience this with. And so that was really the core to our friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it was, you know, I made some friends in high school, my friend Kat, hey, Kat, and her boyfriend Dan. And, you know, there was definitely picked up some momentum. And then that next phase was, you know, it was like going to Shoreline and going to see Jerry at the Warfield. And, you know, I don't have like a real specific this, that. In my overall memory, which we share on the first podcast, which I made Wendy be a guest for, is just, you know, standing at Shoreline and listening to Franklin's Tower. And just we had like a little dance that went with it. And
did you say skipping?
Well, we were skipping. We were dancing. We had like a little dance to Roll Away the Dew.
No, I skip too. We all remember our skipping. I think we all skip at some point on one of our first shows. It's a skipping place.
Yeah, just skipping along the top and the little hand movements and, you know, just the parking lot and the vibe. And at this point, I meet Lamour. And Lamour Farber is one of Wendy's good friends. And so we met via Coming to Dead shows. So Lamour is Wendy's friend and becomes my friend via the shows. And that's kind of the next little time. It's high school. An anecdote I like to say is when Shoreline in 1991, when the Shoreline shows, we're in May, I chose going to a Dead show over prom. Like that was the general vibe going on, you know, like if there was a show, we were there. And, you know, we didn't get into every show. Sometimes it was just the parking lot. I remember going to the Greek Theater in 1989 and just being outside and, you know, like it was whatever you could get at that time, you know, whatever much money you had, wherever you could go, whoever you could meet, whatever you could do.
No doubt.
You know, I think
we all know that so well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's like in today's day with like the Dead & Company tickets and everything being so expensive. I mean, it's like on one hand.
Oh, don't get me going.
Oh, well, I know. Well, I'm addressing this for everyone listening. And it's such an interesting thought to me because on one hand, yeah, it's a big priority and it's a lot of money when I do these things. But it's when I think back to, you know, when the ticket prices were $16.50 or $18.50, the irony is when I was 15, 16, 17 years old, I mean, I simply didn't have that money, you know? I mean, it wasn't a matter of a credit card or a matter of reshuffling and reprioritizing. Like, when we were kids, I mean, we went to shows, but, like, if you had that $20, you had it. And if you didn't, you were just going to go to the parking lot. That was it. There was no getting in because you just didn't have the $20.
I never did that.
No?
I never would hang out in the parking lot. I know it's bad. I never went to a parking lot I didn't get in. I went to a bunch of parking lots without tickets, but I've never been denied. One time I had to break in. Not proud of it.
I don't know if we really asked for the miracles. I mean, I feel like it was, you know, we would go and we would hang out and we would do the vending and we, you know, the drum circle and do all of that. And sometimes we'd get in and sometimes we wouldn't. But I don't ever remember really doing a miracle. Like I was always just either in or just cool with just hanging out there. I don't know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so I'm thinking of going along, and, I mean, another hugely significant night was New Year's Eve. My first New Year's Eve show, I got to go with Kat again. Hey, Kat. And that was so fun. That was 1990 into 91, and we went with Charlie Miller, who is kind of a well-known man among the scenes on the taper. He was taping back then. And
I know the name very well.
Yeah, so we were friends with Charlie. Charlie lived on the peninsula, and we'd hang out with him sometimes, and Charlie and Kat and I all went to the New Year's Eve, and I remember being all dressed up, and I had brown hair, and Kat had blonde hair, and we called ourselves Charlie's Angels.
I only listened to Charlie Miller soundboards, by the way.
Well, Charlie, if you're listening to this, hey now, big part of the experience. And
we love you.
We love you, Charlie. Thanks for all the kind music. His soundboards are amazing. And, that was really fun. And then, again, it all just, it all melts into a dream. I think of, again, Shoreline. I think of Cal Expo and Greek Theater. And now that I'm really thinking back to it, I mean, it's, I guess I'm one of those deadheads that just has, just like the overall sweeping experiences, but not that many specifics. Who knew?
So my very first show, obviously I've told you a million times, was Stack. And there's three things I remember. The guy hanging off the balcony, me skipping, and Johnny B. Good, Unker.
Yeah. Well, again, it's so amazing just to talk to all these people and to really, like, take a minute to self-reflect how, we all come from such a different place, I mean, like, sometimes it's just, like, this broad stroke, and sometimes it's a fine line, Like, everyone's experiences are different, but it all kind of brings us to the same place.
Oh, for sure. I mean, all of our stories are so similar, but absolutely, totally different. And in the end, it's this music, this experience, this life that brings us all together.
Absolutely. No, it's been fun, really, kind of like being reflective and thinking back after, speaking to so many amazing people. But I did have one experience, and this is probably, this is the first repeat experience on the podcast, which makes perfect sense because I'm going to tell the same story that my sister talked about on her podcast, and that is New Year's Eve 1991 and 92. So I think when she thought back, she had some different stories, and I think back and I have some different stories, but I think where our roads meet is New Year's Eve 91 and 92, because with that said about everything being, everything just being a colorful memory, when I think back to that specific show, it's as clear as being on the tip of a pinpoint, like I remember it like it was yesterday. And
wasn't that the one that closed down the Coliseum? Wasn't that the last New Year's show at Coliseum?
It was the last New Year's show at Coliseum. It was right after Bill Graham died. So Bill Graham died in October. And so this was the last New Year's Eve show they had at the Coliseum.
I almost remember where I was when Bill Graham died more than I remember. It's true. I don't know where I was when I found out Jerry died. I know exactly what I was doing when I found out that his helicopter got caught by power lines, leaving a Huey Lewis concert. I was crushed.
Where were you?
I was in San Ramon. I was in my house. A friend had called me. He knew my story about how I met Bill once. And I don't know if that's on your podcast, but I was at Cal Expo when he put his arm around me out of nowhere while I was staring at a picture. It's the Vineta, Oregon picture with the spinners, famous picture. And all of a sudden, I'm dose tripping, staring at this picture. And he, all of a sudden, an arm comes around me from the left. And on my right, I see this hand on my shoulder. And all of a sudden, a voice whispers in my ear, "That's my favorite picture of the Grateful Dead. Deadheads." And I'm like, I know that voice. And I turn around, and right in my face is Bill Graham's face, whispering in my ear. I go, "Oh my God." I go, "Hey, Bill." He's like, "Hey." We chatted for about a couple minutes, and I was so freaked out about it. I was freaked out about it the whole show. And I went to the beer garden at halftime, and I got a beer, and I'm walking out thinking, I just can't believe I ran to Bill Graham. And what happens? Boom. I literally run into him. And we both lift our heads and look at each other, smile, friends, and just move on. So ever since that moment, I felt a connection to him, and his death really bothered me.
Yeah, no, it was a game changer for sure. I mean, there were so many game changers. I mean, there were so many when you think back to, to all of the years, and that was one of them. Because I mean, Bill was
all the
Father
Times.
Yeah, I mean, he really pulled so much of it together. I mean, he really was.
Now for the people that aren't on the West. Here's something that people don't realize. And, I think Bill Graham's iconic more so on the West Coast. And people on the East Coast probably never he wasn't the promoter. He was the West Coast promoter, for the shows. I think he might have done the Fillmore East show. But for the most part, when you went to a Dead show on the West Coast, especially the Bay Area, he's around there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Bill Graham Presents. It's at the top of every ticket. Bill Graham Presents.
It's at the top. Yep.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it really, and again, this is kind of West Coast centric, but hey, it's my story and I'm sticking to it. You got to live on the West Coast. So there you go.
Hey, I mean, once we realized it, I moved from New Jersey to California, to Sacramento December 26, 87, stopped in Oakland, did the New Year's shows, moved up to Sacramento. And I realized I can see 25 shows, possibly a year, just driving within 90 minutes.
Totally. No, I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, when I talk to people about experiences and going to dead shows or how many shows I saw, which I don't really have a hard number, but I think at one point I counted around 100. So mm-hmm. we'll say in that general ballpark between 88 and 95. But that being said, that wasn't that hard to do with that many years living in the Bay Area. I mean, it was just, you know, that was it. That's how that happens. You know, it's like something that you're into and they play. And I don't like the whole, you know, competition and deader than thou and people that count the you know, they count how many shows. And I mean, not my scene, but there's a lot of shows because you just could, you know. I mean, it was a lot less effort than people who went on tours on the East Coast, you know. It was just the backyard. Oh. It was amazing.
Two runs at Calispo, two runs at the Oakland Coliseum, two runs at Shoreline. I closed the Greek. They stopped doing Cal Palace, then they stopped doing Frost. And between Calispo, Greek, Oakland and Shoreline. That was it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. I mean, you just probably counted up 30, 35 shows in 1 year right there. I mean, there was,
about 26.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was Mardi Gras. There was Chinese New Year.
Oh, Henry J. Kaiser. I did the Henry J. Kaiser at the Mardi Gras. That was great.
Yeah, I mean, that was there. There was, and then the Jerry shows, you know, the Civic Center, the Warfield, I mean, and on, you know, it was an amazing time and place to be able to have as a memory. It's really special. So in 91, going into 92, my sister and I talked about this, you know, we ran into our cousin and it was just kind of one of those nights where everything just kind of clicked in, you know, he got us better spots, we sat down below, we didn't even want to leave because we didn't think we could get back. And I just have this, and he snuck us in a couple of beers. Like, I think he said he was going to get us champagne, and he came back with a couple of cans of Coors Light. And nobody had cans. You couldn't bring cans into the Oakland Coliseum. So just having a can of Coors Light was just amazing. And I just have this super clear vision memory of my sister and I nestled in our little spot that Bobby dropped us off at. And nears hitting and having our cans of Coors Light and just the balloons and the lights and the, you know, the dripping of, you know, the lights dripping off the ceiling. I just recently watched the video to bring myself back to that moment. And to be totally honest, I didn't remember the song at that moment. And on my sister's podcast, I'm pretty sure we played Sugar Magnolia, which was a common New Year's song, but it was not Fade Away. And that was it. Like, they did the drums, and then they came on, and it just, I don't know, it was like just the accumulation of everything that I associated with a dead show. You know, just the lights, the balloons, the music, the people, the parade. It was just magic. It was just pure, pure magic.
Now, we're talking about the balloons that drop from the ceiling, not the balloons that you take in the parking lot.
Oh, yes. The balloons that drop from the ceiling. No. No, just the massive balloons dropping, the confetti going off. It's just, you know, like if you think about, like, you know, what is New Year's Eve? You think about, you know, emojis these days that are created for celebration. I mean, you think about what is a celebration. You think about music. You think about laughter. You think about balloons. You think about confetti. I mean, it was just everything you could possibly put together with, fuck yeah, we're celebrating. And the Coors Light in my hand, which I'm not a beer drinker, but, you know, at 20 years old, it was the fucking bomb, you know, just to have that sealed the deal, you know, it was just, and to be so illicit, you know, we had this can of beer and no one else did. It was, it was absolute magic.
If you don't like balloon drops, you're not human.
It's so special. So let's go back. Let's hear it. That was my second pick. So of all of the shows, like if I really think back to, you know, that time and that place and what was so meaningful, there it is. That was like the pinnacle of everything. So let's bring everyone back to New Year's Eve 91 into 92 for a little Not Fade Away.
Clap, 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 clap.
Okay, enjoy.
Meeting night.
With Stacey Smith. We just enjoyed Not Fade Away from the closing New Year's show at the Oakland Coliseum 1991 into 1992. What do we got next?
So what do we got next? Well, 92, you know, to 95, yeah, more of the same. I feel like I was in my 20s. I started working, kind of got involved in a relationship, and I slowed down a little. I would still go to the shows, still go to the Shoreline shows. Still caught some Oakland shows. I mean, I would go, but I think that grip, that identity, that I am a deadhead, started to kind of fade into the background of who I was as a person and a little less in the forefront of who you met when you met me. I think it became, it started living more in my soul, but less in my clothes, less in my job, less in my, you know, overall persona. And I think that's probably natural for a lot of people, but I can absolutely say I was one of those people where the impact of being a deadhead became something where people would find out when you'd be talking to them, oh, you're a deadhead. Oh, I didn't realize that, as opposed to it hitting you over the head when you first met.
Gotcha.
So I would say, you know, that goes through to 95. And then, you know, of course, we all know 95 in August when, Jerry passed, and I mean, that was the ultimate game changer for the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, like I said, that was it for me. I was done.
Yeah, I think I was too.
I just kind of come to dope.
No, I think I was too. I think that was the final. And you know, quite honestly, it wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't even a conscious decision. I think it was just a combination of, you know, that being the closing of an era and, yeah, I mean, at that point, I was 1995. I was 22, so you know, starting the career, the relationship. You know, your life just takes its course, and I think at that point, my life just took on that course of career and family and so on and so forth. And that course took 20 years. You know, it took me to the East Coast. It took me, you know, marrying my husband, working in the wine and spirits business in California. Then we moved to New England, where his family's from, and have continued to work in the wine business out here. And I was always a deadhead. You know, I'd always meet new people and they, you know, I'd show them stickers or pictures and they'd be like, oh, that's cool, you know, but it was always the music I preferred to listen to. But I really didn't see much of any live music for pretty much the next 20 years. The only exception I could think of is right before I got pregnant with my son, my friend Lindsay and I did go see Rat Dog at the Calvin Theater in Northampton. And I think seeing Bobby at the Calvin in Northampton that was it. That was the last one.
Crazy.
Actually, let me say
that. You know, it wasn't this conscious choice for me either. I didn't realize it until afterwards. He passed and I just kept working because at this point I already had a career that let me go see some shows, not as much as I used to be able to. And then I just started focusing on my career, not by choice. And then a couple years later, I realized I never went. I just further, no, Rat Dog, no. Because I think what I would do is I would just keep comparing it to the Jerry versions. And I said, I don't want to do that. I go, I have my neat little package of my years with the Grateful Dead. That was it. And I want to preserve that. And it's selfish, and I could have had a good time, but I'm happy with my decision.
Yeah, like it. I think we all have our journey, and you can't really question it, whether it included seeing, you know, all the different incarnations of the band, seeing Further, seeing The Dead, seeing the other ones, going to see Rat Dog. I mean, there was so much great music out there, but it just wasn't in my wheelhouse at that time. And I think it's just, again, a combination of, you know, just life and moving and children and all of that stuff. So that's a good little 20-year break. But I'm gonna bring us back up to a more current times. And it was fall of 2015. Well, actually, to take a step back, summer of 2015, and I've told this story on the podcast a few times, I did not go to Faraday Well. Really wasn't an option for me. I was planning to go to the West Coast around the same dates, and then they played the West Coast, but I got there a week later. So I was bummed. I mean, I was bummed. I really wanted to be there. And then I remember thinking to myself, well, if it sucks, I'm best to miss it. And if it's really good, there'll be more. Like, if this is good and it's on and people are connected, I don't think it'll be the last shows. I think something's going to happen afterwards. Yeah, I mean, so there you go. Like, it was, there'll be more. And then after that, they announced the Dead & Company coming out. You know, even a little bit before they announced the Dead & Company, there was a point in the fall where I was kind of working through something in my life, and the only thing that made me feel better was listening to the Grateful Dead. It was kind of nuts. Like, there was nothing that gave me the peace and the soothing balm that I needed than listening to the Grateful Dead. And it was all the time. I mean, it was everything all the time. It was the only thing that I wanted to hear. And that's coming out of somebody who, you know, enjoyed lots of different music. But it just became one station all the time starting in October. And then the Dead & Company Worcester came. So it was it all sort of played its hand out.
Yeah.
So Dead & Company Worcester, get tickets. My friend Steve White, hey Steve, friend from my wine business industry, and he comes down and we end up getting to see the show together. And I have like that moment that I really like to think back to. I remember standing at the DCU Center in Worcester. It's my first show really on the East Coast. They're playing, and I remember turning to Steve and saying, "This is it. I know more about the Dead. I love more about the Dead than anything I've ever learned about wine, which is my career in the last 20 years. Like, I'm home. This is it. You know, this is where my heart lies."
That's where most of our heart lies. And we often put it in front of a lot of things in our life sometimes. And we're lucky enough that we have family members and jobs and other stuff that understand our love and passion for these events and this music.
Yeah, it was coming home. I mean, it was just coming home from, you know, going into the Marriott in Worcester and had that smell. You know, I hadn't smelt that smell in so long. It was a winter show, and it was just that smell, that combination of, like, you know, weed and patchouli and sweat, right? Like, that the whole Marriott just smelled like that smell when I walked in, maybe a touch of incense mixed in. And, and just the show and being there and the songs. I mean, I remember just Uncle John's Band just really speaking to me, and Ramblin' Rose really speaking to me, and Terrapin really speaking to me. I mean, as much as I don't have those specific song site memories from, you know, going to the Grateful Dead shows when I was younger, when I think about, like, the Dead & Company and where I was, you know, now on the other side of 40 in my life, it's quite the opposite. Like, they really resonated with me. It was really meaningful.
There's just so much.
There's so much. And honestly, thinking about that show, it was kind of tough to pick which song. But I went with Ramblin' Rose because I remember getting back to my hotel room and looking it up and realizing that there's this website called, which I do still now, Setlist FM. And I was fucking blown away. I started looking up the lyrics and looking at, you know, what the set list was and reading through the lyrics. And I just couldn't believe that you could, like, leave a show, go back to your room, and then just, like, see exactly what you just saw. It's like 2 hours later. It was, I mean, amazing to me.
I love it. Setlist FM is my favorite.
Yeah, I discovered it for the first time that night. And I remember just, like, going through. And with Ramblin' Rose, I remember just wanting to read each lyric about it. And as I just said a little bit ago, I was kind of, you know, grappling with some things in my life. And it was the lyric, "The grass ain't greener, the wine ain't sweeter, either side of the hill." And that was it. Like, that was my lyric for a while. You know, that's what got me through, like, to the other side, is just, you know, it penetrated. And so that's the song I chose. Again, it could have easily been Uncle John's Band with, you know, "Are You Kind" and "Don't Tread on Me." I remember those moments. And absolutely, Terrapin offered a ton of inspiration. But I went with Ramblin' Rose just because, I don't know, that line was it really carried it with me.
Can't wait.
Yeah, so let's go back. Let's intro a little Dead and Company into this podcast. Let's listen into the boy singing in Worcester.
This is the beginning of the tour, the first tour. This is the beginning. They're ironing out some stuff here, but I think they kicked off pretty good in 2015, to tell you the truth.
I don't have a single complaint. It was awesome. It was so, so good. It was awesome. So, yeah, well, let's listen to it. And then we'll come back, and that's kind of where the podcast comes in, and a lot of meat on the bones post November 10th, 2015.
I'm excited.
We are back from listening to Ramble on Rose. Okay, now it just gets like, now there's a lot. So I'm gonna try and like trim my stories down, or else this podcast could be like 3 fucking hours. And anyone who's listened to this podcast or knows me knows I like to talk.
And anybody who knows me knows I don't shut up, so I'm making it worse, so I'll just keep quiet.
No, you're doing great. You know, it's funny. I was thinking, gosh, as we're making this podcast, I've talked so much more on this podcast than I normally do because I really want to hear people's stories. For a minute, I just felt kind of self-conscious, like, Jesus, all I'm doing is talking. And then I had to think, well, this is my story. It's my chance to talk.
Of course. It's your story.
This is my story.
Sorry I stepped on it.
No, I know. There's no one I would want to be sharing this story with more. So, but for anyone, I just was like, Jesus Christ, I'm talking more than I ever do in any of these podcasts. So it's pretty.
It's your podcast.
Oh, it's so fun. So fun. The memories are so fun. So we get back from November. I end up going back home for the week between Christmas and New Year's and catch the Civic Center. Kat and with Morgan and with my girlfriend Liz. Hey, Liz, and my sister and brother-in-law, and that was just awesome. I mean, the Civic Center is such a beautiful venue, and, you know, we got to go see them at home there in San Francisco, and, yeah, I was like, it sealed the deal. Like, it was the second show on that tour that I got, and I was like, I'm in. And I remember having a couple drinks maybe in February with my girlfriend Erin Taylor. Hey, Erin, and we were having some drinks in February, and I was like, you know, this stuff is just, it's so good that if they announce a 2016 tour, I'm going to do as much as I can. Like, I'm going to just, I'm going to push it, you know, time and money. This is it. This is a priority, and I'm in. I'm all in. So I was like primed up and ready to go. Like, I'm ready to see, bring it. Like, you bring it on, and I'll be there. So the next part of the story is kind of where the podcast comes in. So I know some people know the story of the podcast, but not everybody. So I'm gonna explain where Strangers Stopping Strangers really all came to be. And it's a pretty cool story. So now we are in May of 2016. And I'm on it, I'm all in. Talking to Wendy, who I mentioned earlier from, you know, high school, and still one of my very best friends. And we're on the phone and I'm telling her a story that I'm thinking of. I'm thinking about Jerry Garcia observation and him and the juxtaposition about him and Harry Nilsson's life. And I don't know, if I was to ever write a thesis, this would be on. She's like, you know, you love this music so much and you love to talk. I mean, you're a salesperson. You talk to people. You love meeting people. You love talking to people. Like, that's who you are. You should do something, you know, you should do something. The idea came up was a documentary. You should make a documentary. And I was kind of like, you know, all right, sure. I'm going to make a documentary. I've got, you know, no money, no experience, a full-time job, 2 children, live in Western Massachusetts. Sure, let's just go make a documentary. Sounds great, but pretty far-fetched. So she's like, I feel it. You got to do something. So I ended up sending out a couple of emails. The second email I sent was to Dennis McNally. And Dennis McNally, you know, was the publicist for the Grateful Dead for 10 years. He wrote several amazing books, and I had read one of his books, and at the end of his website, there was a little contact me. So I sent him an email, you know, inspiration moved me brightly, that I have an idea and I want to do something and I wanted some feedback. Well, he emailed me back. We emailed a little bit, and we made a time to talk. It was like just gobsmacked, like, okay, I'm going to talk to him. So we chat on the phone for a little while. He couldn't have been kinder. He couldn't have been, you know, more supportive. And at this point, it had gotten boiled down to a podcast. And bear in mind, I had never even listened to a podcast. I don't even remember how it went from documentary to a podcast. I didn't even know what a podcast was. But I'd heard the word, but never listened to any. And it was just a more digestible concept. So I said, you know, what do you think of this? And he said, sure, why not? You know, you like to talk. Sure, go for it. Why not? What do you got to lose? And that was it. You know, that was the inspiration that I needed, just that green light to go for it.
Everything that happens about these, I've noticed in a lot of these stories that everything that happens is just so natural the way it goes. It's like no effort involved. It's like just things unfold for it.
Yeah, like just green, like hitting a series of green lights, you know. So then comes in my friend Lamore that I mentioned earlier, who is still one of Wendy's, you know, core friends. And Lamore was that girl at the show that was like just that creative girl. She was, you know, always doodling and are just really, really talented and very whimsical and just had like a really special core to herself, very art, just a born artist. So Wendy says, you should get in touch with Lamora. She'll do the website. Reconnect with Lamora after, I don't know, close to 30 years. She designs the website and she creates the logo. And creating the logo was really important to me because I didn't want to do anything that was having to do with a trademark Grateful Dead piece of artwork. I wanted her to commission something special, something that would be stranger stopping strangers, that wouldn't be something that was someone else had used. So I have to say, I mean, the when people say, oh, that artwork is beautiful, I'm like, yeah, it's fucking beautiful. I didn't make it. Lamour made it. Lamour, I sent her some pictures and some images, and Lamour is just so creative and so wonderful. So she put up the website, got all of the feelings, all of the vibes, and made the logo. And we were on our way.
If I'm on the internet or not, I see your logo every day because you gave me a magnet sticker and it's on my refrigerator.
I just love it. I just think it's so beautiful. And I'm so grateful for Lamour for making it. So that's it. So we're like, we got the website, we got the podcast. Now the next thing is like, how the fuck do you make a podcast, right? I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never really listened to them. I don't even know what an MP3 is. I got nothing. So I tell Wendy that she needs to be the first guest. And Wendy is an artist as well. You know, her and I talk on the phone all of the time, but the idea of like doing an interview was pretty daunting. And I've gone back to it, and it does make me happy to listen to it. But I mean, in terms of the actual sound quality, it was like cell phone to cell phone on like a call recorder. And yeah, it was pretty raw. But I told Wendy, you know, you're the one who gave me the idea. You're first up to bat. It's your podcast. And actually, looking at stats, Wendy is the most downloaded podcast because she's the first one. So it's pretty cool. So the podcast is up and running. And the next thing is to start meeting some strangers. And that worked out really well because, you know, Dead & Company was coming up. So my girlfriend Erin and I flew down to North Carolina, and I met some cool people there. And then we were able to catch the SPAC show where I met you, right? Strangers Stopping Strangers,
yeah,
Magnet, you know, it's where we met. And it was kind of off and running. And
kind of surreal. We were two strangers stopping each other on the lawn up on the top there. And from there, it was all beauty.
Exactly. That's the goal. That's the essence. You know, that's really the essence of what I wanted to do. And you and I talking, you know, 14 months later is, you know, it's a stranger stopping strangers and then having connections and being friends. And it's,
we're actually friends. Like I want to tell you this the other day, we're actually like friends. It's beyond the music. Like we have a friendship.
Yeah.
Still, are you still pulling possible interviews from the crowds? I mean, that's how you got mine.
I'm trying to think. Possibly. I mean, honestly, there's been so much with social media. There's so many people that I've met that it's been way more on that front. If I look through the list, yeah, I'm trying to think of people that I met over the summer. I met this amazing family that I would really like to get on the podcast in Saratoga that had the bus, that was the family that were in the bus that traveled together. We've been in touch about doing something. There was this amazingly cool couple in Shoreline that I had talked about doing something with her, but now it's just been kind of more online. I mean, more people that I've connected with online and then talked online and then messaged online and then been like, you know, you should come on the podcast. So I would say it's come more from that, but I'm totally open to anything. You know, I mean, however it works is however it's supposed to work.
Yeah,
it's so fun. I'm so blessed. I mean, I just wish I could do one every week. I just wish I had the time. I mean, it really is my favorite thing in the world is meeting people and talking to people and getting this all out. It makes me so happy. It really does.
We do what we love. It's a creative force, and it's beautiful. I'm happy with you. Yeah, I always say I'm happy for you. It's like, no, I'm happy with you. I don't know how, I can't be happy for you. I'm happy, and I'm happy with you.
Oh, well, that's everything. So let's see. So I got two more songs. I'm going to lead us up to the day. So I've got two more stories I'm going to share and two more song selections. I was only going to do one more, but I decided to add them both. So I think the next probably pivotal thing in the journey that just kind of speaks to something that switched with me was when my girlfriend Liz came out to go see Bob Weir at the Capitol Theater. So this was October 16th, just this past year, 2016, and Liz came out for a special weekend to go see Bobby, and we stayed down in Connecticut, and like that was the vacation was centered around that. And at this point, I had made some friends, met up with my friend Deb there. Hey, Deb. Deb's been a shout-out on several of the podcasts. And we get to go to the show, and it was the first, like, general admission small show I had been to. And, you know, the Capitol Theater is I mean, it's so cool for anyone who's been there in Westchester, in New York, in Port Chester. I remember, like, going in with Liz and then, like, going in and then, like, going farther in and then going farther in and being, you know, two or three out from the stage and seeing Tiny Dancer dancing around and running into Ron Cohen, who I'd become friendly with, and suddenly just being, you know, at the Capitol Theater right up front, and it's his birthday, and they do the cake, and just there was this magic of just being right there, you know, like not just there, but right there. I wouldn't go as far as to say I was on the rail, but I was, you know, maybe two or three deep in, but it was, I could just feel the energy of what was happening on the stage. It sunk in, you know, it just became like a new addiction, really. You know, it's like I need a fix for, you know, not just being at the shows and not just hearing the music, but I think after the Capitol Theater that night, it was like, I not only want to be there, but I want to be there. And it's a feeling I really haven't been able to shake ever since.
I get it. You need to tell Bobby that you lived in his house. That might be an in. I'm not saying like you need to do that, but I mean, it's kind of intriguing.
Oh, I would love to meet Bobby one day and tell him that I lived in his house. And I will meet Bobby one day. I mean, I'll meet Bobby when the time is right, at the right place, at the right time. And I'm a huge Bobby fan. And getting to see him on his tour with his, you know, with his album release and his songs. I mean, it was so much fun. It was, and just being there again, just like seeing him being connected. So I picked out Eyes of the World from that. It was just great. I mean, Eyes of the World is always one of my favorite songs, always meaningful. So let's go back to the Capitol Theater. It was Bobby's 69th birthday. And hear a little Eyes of the World. We'll come back with one more story and one more song.
Awesome. I have not heard Bobby sing solo yet.
Enjoy.
Has it been? Wait now, discover that you are
And we're back. Thank you for that campfire tour version of Eyes of the World. And we move on.
We move on. Now it's going, right? So now the podcast is going sometimes once a week, sometimes every other week. The social media, all the people I've met. I mean, it's become part of my life. And it's one of my favorite parts of my life. It's pretty amazing. And so we're going along. I've met all kinds of incredible people. I met Geraldine, who was on the podcast recently, and Sunshine, and have met with Dennis several times. Him and I have had lunch and coffee when I've been in San Francisco. And, you know, I got to say, like, this community has just been so welcoming, so just a really authentic group of people. I mean, most everyone I've met has just been really positive, really welcoming, and it's just been really special. I'm all in at this point. And I mean, that's kind of comes towards the end of the story that leads me today. But I do want to add one more song in. And this kind of goes back to me saying, you know, after seeing Bobby at the Cap, I was obsessed with being, you know, right there in front of the band. So I see some J-Rad shows. I see Dark Star Orchestra. Like, I see some other live music. It's just so fun. But at this point, I got to be down there. Like, I've got to be there. I've got to be up front. Summer tour of 2017, I got out to Shoreline, which was just incredible, you know, going back home, going back to the house that Bill Graham built, you know, getting to be with Kat and my friend Rebecca, and Liz is there, and my sister's there, and Chris, and it was just so amazing going back to, you know, back to my roots and back to Shoreline. And I loved everything about the shows, except for the fact that I couldn't be up front. Like, I loved them. They were great. They sounded awesome. And I enjoyed my spot on the lawn and kind of almost got up front with Geraldine. I got into the front one section with her, and I got a little bit in the seats with Peter White, who I met up there. But I was there, but I wasn't able to get all the way there. And I think I really enjoyed the shows, but like this, like one little part of me that was just this compulsive wanting to get up front wasn't in place. So then we go to Fenway, and my sister comes out, and Liz comes out, and I mean, the Fenway shows were amazing, and again, I don't have GA seats, but I managed to sneak down.
Huh.
I managed to sneak down, and I get to the floor, and the second night, I'm with my friend Steve White that went to the first show in Worcester with me, and he has fucking awesome seats. He's in, like, the last seat before the GA. So Steve steps me down, I get up front, and I'm one row away from the GA. And I'm a fairly small woman, and these guys pick me up and put me down on the floor. It was fucking awesome. So
it was great.
I didn't know it.
These guys just picked me up and put me here.
They picked me up and put me over, yeah. And then I crawled back over for, like, the set break, and then the beginning of the second set starts, and I'm like, let's go, boys. And they picked me up and put me back down again. Oh, my God. It was just so awesome. It was just where I needed to be, and it was so fun. And so fun being with those other people. I have, like, a really fun memory of this, a picture of this guy, and I don't remember his name, but we were, like, dancing and hanging out together down front. O'Teal side, you know, maybe two or three in. And at the end I said, you know, thanks for sharing your space with me. I don't have I don't have a wristband, but thank you. And he was like, oh, I don't have a wristband either. I have no idea where my fucking seats are for this place. It's everything, right? You know, you just meet those people,
yeah.
And everyone makes room. Everybody shares. Everyone's, you know, for the most part, like no other, you know?
So this is the birth of a rail runner. This is, folks, this is how people become rail riders. And I always wonder why these people, it's like, once they get to the rail, once you go rail, you never go back. It doesn't rhyme with back. But I'm telling you, these people, that they're fixated on the rail. Now you're one of them. I'm so happy with you.
Yeah, I am. And again, it's a bittersweet situation, because I get so much out of it, but then I need that. Again, it almost feels like some sort of an addiction. Like, it's like I'll get my fix, but I don't fully get my fix unless I'm, and it doesn't have to be the actual rail. I just have to be, again, a upfront part of it where I can see, you know,
You want to be in Bobby's spit zone? Does he still do that? Bobby's spit,
yeah,
zone?
I want to be in the spit zone. That's it. Exactly. I don't need to be on the rail, but I want to be in the spit zone. I want to be part of it.
No, you might get sprayed a couple lines back. You might get some.
I want to be connected, you know, and again, I've met so many cool people through that, through just that group, because it's all the same group that wants to be, you know, up there. So that's been a whole nother, like, super cool part of it. And, you know, saw J-Rad in Greenfield and got right up there, and in the Capitol Theater with my sister and got right up there. And you know, it's gone on and on. But the final like story I'll tell about my my new becoming of the rail riding adventure is when I got to Citi Field. In Citi Field, I was legitimately able to buy a G8 ticket, so I was so fucking pumped, right?
How much was that G8 ticket?
It was $145. You know, I was able to buy face value. Yeah, it was face value. They did a second release of face value, and I'm not anywhere going to spend $400 or $500, $600 for these seats. But when they did the second wave of release of GA and it was $145, I was like, well, yeah, that's it. I'm in. Like, let's do it. So I go meet Deb, who, you know, has become a really good friend of mine in New York, and we end up meeting up there, and the show begins, and I was like, yeah, I'll catch you later. I'm good. Like, I'm going in. And I got to meet Doug Clifton, who is hopefully going to be a guest one day soon on this podcast, because he must have the most amazing stories. And, I mean, he is at every show, everywhere, every time. And so I run into Doug, and he makes a little spot for me. Yeah, I mean, the show was just amazing. And they opened up with Dancing in the Streets. I have just fallen in love with not just Dancing in the Streets, but the version of Dancing in the Streets, that real, like, throwback Cornell. It's so good. And yeah, it was like the song of the summer for me. You know, I kind of started feeling it in May, and then, you know, hearing it in June, and being right there in the pit for Dancing in the Streets was just, I don't know. It was everything.
You know, I got that video. And you know what? For you, I'm going to post it today up on Facebook. I love that version. I almost put it up the other day, the city version. We'll watch the video later.
It was so good. Yeah, so that there you go. That's last June, and, you know, here we are in the end of September, 50th podcast, and who knows, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't know what's next, but
use your intuition like you have, because you have great intuition. This is really helpful in everything that you – the way you sell – I mean, you've been a successful salesperson. You're successful in doing this, and you can't be the successful unless you're tuned into what people like and you have intuition. And you have the intuition, and whatever comes next, I promise you, it's just going to fall on your lap. You just have to recognize the signs. You talked about the green lights. You got to recognize the signs. The signs are out there. You got to be aware. There's something waiting for you, I promise.
Well, you know what? I'm just enjoying the ride. Well, let's do a sign off on the talk now, and then I'll do the Dancing in the Streets. For everybody who's tuned in to the 50th episode of Stranger Stopping Strangers, for anyone who's tuned in before, is tuning in for the first time now, who got to hear Michael's podcast number 12, who is listening. I mean, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying. Thank you for contributing. Thank you for being part of this experience. Thank you to anyone who sent me a note, whether it's on social media, an email, encouragement to anybody sending me an email and saying, hey, I want to be on the podcast. A few of my guests have come out that way. I mean, you know, it's about the community. It's about everyone. It's about you. It's about people I haven't met, the people I have met. It's about the music. It's about, you know, the Grateful Dead back in, you know, my early days up through, you know, the amazing incarnations and iterations of the bands that we get to see and will continue to see. So, you know, That's
I want to take this time to, and I'm sure I speak, I'm going to speak for everybody that's listening to you, that we thank you. We thank you for opening up yourself and getting other people to open up, because not everybody wants to open up. And you're showing us so many different wonderful aspects and perspectives of people's lives and the Grateful Dead. And just for everybody that's ever listened, we're thanking you right now.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'll take that. Thank you. it's absolutely a project of passion, and as I like to say, without love in the dream, it'll never come true. So, you know, it's just it's really special. Well, I'm getting flaclept. So let's sign it off, man. Let's go out. Let's leave with a Dancing in the Streets from Citi Field, June 24th. And all I can say is, I'm just so excited for the future experiences, the fall tour, playing in the sand. Woohoo! There's so much fun shit to look forward to. So, woohoo! Bye.
Bye.
Come on, come on, I'm dancing. Come on, come on, I'm dancing. just a shake of wind. Everybody's praying in the heart of gold.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.